You are listening to Where the Evidence Leads, an apology for science and reason.
Hello, welcome to yet another episode of Where the Evidence Leads. This is one of your hosts, Marshall.
Hi,
and we have
this is Paul.
Paul,
our other host. Skeptics group, as well as S is for Science at Blogspot.
And that's your podcast, correct?
Right. No, I don't have, I don't have a podcast. I got a
not blog. Podcast. A blog, scientific blog. Which I need to check again. I've been
I haven't written anything for a couple of weeks. We've been my wife went on vacation, and she went on vacation and left me here to take care of everything, and I spent most of my nights working until 9 o'clock at night. So I haven't they just got back here about a week and a half ago, and we've been playing catch up. So I haven't written probably in 3 weeks.
Yeah, I've been kind of late. I've been really busy at work. We're down three supervisors where I live, so I've had to pick up a lot of extra responsibilities. And
wow,
I'm working. The rest of us are all working our butts off, and then when I get home, I just don't want to do anything but fetch. So yeah. I've been a bad boy. I've been really lazy recently. Then I just got back from the Lake of the Ozarks, spent the holiday weekend in southern Missouri, or central Missouri, I guess, which thank God I had my concealed carry license.
Did you get pulled over?
No, but I just won't go to Missouri without a weapon on.
Oh, my. Oh, gee. I guess down in the Ozarks, you start hearing banjo playing in the background, you might want to be afraid.
I'm just kidding. There's a, as you know, where we live, there's a strong Kansas-Missouri rivalry.
Yeah.
So whenever I get the opportunity to talk smack about Missouri, I jump on it. It's good, say.
So you have a good 3-day weekend?
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. Didn't actually get on the Lake of the Ozarks. We went down with some friends, and they were supposed to bring their boat, but apparently it wasn't working, so... In honesty, we didn't do anything there that we couldn't have done here. My wife and my other wife's friend went shopping the entire time.
Spent
a fortune. And my friend and I, we actually went to a shooting range for a while. I'm not going to try to hijack this show into another gun discussion, but we did go shooting. And just a couple of some outdoors and stuff. And we got stuck with the kids most of the time.
That's always cool.
While the girls went shopping.
Yeah, that's always cool. I love when I have a passel of kids with me. Because I like to wind them up, let them loose in the backyard, have them go nuts.
Yeah, I gave them all rock stars.
Yeah.
And spun them around in circles. And it was a fun day. It was a fun weekend. I did enjoy it.
Excellent.
So how are things going with you?
Oh, it went well. We had a pretty good weekend. This is the first Labor Day weekend. Or Memorial Weekend, for that matter, for the last decade that I actually had Saturday, Sunday, and Monday off work. It was quite the event. We went to Penguin Park in Missouri. If you've never been there, it was fun. We had a picnic there, spent all day at Penguin Park. Sunday, we got up, got dressed, and went to Bowling's for dim sum. That's something we've been talking about doing. See, I don't usually have Sundays off. So we went did that for the first time. We were there for quite a long time and spent a large amount of money. Had a really good time. It was really good food, and it was a fun experience. And then Monday, we went to a movie and spent a good portion of our time and money at Dave & Buster's. And we had a lot of fun. And Trinity absolutely enjoyed all of it. So,
well, you got to love Dave & Buster's.
Yeah, it was really fun. My daughter, wife and daughter love to play the games with token. You get little tags that spit out. Tickets, and we had over 3,000 tickets. So we
3,000?
3,000 tickets.
Wow.
Well, it was it was really quite the coup. We had three coupons they'd sent us in the mail for Labor Day. Buy one entree, get an entree free. So basically our lunch was free almost, except we paid $17. And buy $50 in tokens or credits, you get $50 in credits. Well, we had a gift certificate there for $50. And if you showed up on Labor Day, they gave you a free $20, free just for showing up and credits. So we had 70 credits. And our $70 for the credits was something like 500-600 credits. And when we left, we still had over 200 credits left on the card. So
wow.
It was quite the little weekend.
So what'd you end up getting out of that?
We left. Well, we'd gone there once before, almost a year ago, as a matter of fact, and we'd left like 3,000 then. We had the 3,000 that we earned this time. And there's really not much to buy until you get around the 10,000 range, because they don't have a lot of the little toys anymore. So she bought, Trinity got a cup with a straw that goes around the outside of it. She was pretty excited about that. She bought
a
rubber robot. She thought I'd like that. And then a handful of other trinkets. We spent like 1,000 of her credits was it. And, you know, there's just really not much you need at Dave and Buster's. So.
No, I had some friends who.
Yeah. You had friends who went?
Went there religiously, and I think they actually did save up about 10,000 tickets, and they ended up getting a Wii.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, when you get up around that area, you can actually. But, I mean, it's pretty expensive. If you shop for coupons, if you just go and say, give me tickets, you can blow a large amount of money very quickly. But
yeah, it is not a cost-effective way of getting a Wii.
No. Especially, it's not a cost-effective way, especially if you play games and drink, which is the whole premise behind it.
Yeah. So, anyway, let's talk about the show.
Okay.
July 7th, I believe. Huffington Post ran an article.
The Huff,
which I have a new phone. I used to have an iPhone. I now have a Droid, and I do not have the Huffington Post on my Droid. I used to check that thing every day.
Really?
And I was very disappointed to see them print an article by a David Klinghoffer, who is a member of the Discovery Institute.
He's a fellow.
Of the Discovery Institute. And he basically was pimping a movie that they were putting out. I don't know why the Huffington Post allowed him to do this. They have a movie coming out called What Hath Darwin Wrought, which basically is an attempt to blame Charles Darwin for eugenics and racism. Because as you know, racism did not exist before Darwin.
Well, I mean, before Darwin, I mean, let's face it, Hitler, Mao, and Stalin, they were all choir boys, and they all belonged to the Church of God, and they wore, you know, nice white clothes, and then one day they read The Origin of Species, and they instantly turned evil and decided to oppress the world, because it was that simple.
That's what happened to me.
Yeah, that's what happened to me as well.
I'm just not successful or no, but ambitious.
You're surprised at the Huffington Post, because I've read a lot of their stuff, and some of their stuff is very questionable. Very questionable as to their scientific integrity.
Well, I normally don't read anything scientific they put out there. I just usually read the opinion pieces. But
all their pieces are opinion pieces, aren't they?
Not all.
Just kidding. Just kidding.
So anyway, I posted this in the Huffington Post, and I was outraged. And I wanted to say something about it. Nobody would listen to me. I remembered, hey, I got a podcast. I'll talk about it there. So that's what we're going to talk about today, and then we're just going to address some other common creationist arguments. We're going to be picking on a website written by an Evan Wiggs.
Really?
He's basically a creationist.
What's the website?
And www.evanwiggs.com/article/reasons.html. I did a lot of searching for what I considered a fair representation of, or a non-strawman representation of creationism. And
non-strawman?
It's very difficult to find. Most of the arguments against evolution are laughably absurd.
Really?
I went through a lot of articles and websites and Google searches before I finally found something that I didn't find completely ridiculous. Most of them are kind of involved the, you know, if we evolved from monkeys, then why are there still monkeys in that kind of line of reasoning?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that argument still is a popular one among a lot of a creationist, believe it or not. And to talk about these things with us, this article, The Dark Side of Darwinism, and to answer these questions with us, we have from YouTube, famous YouTuber, Don Exodus. You've seen him, haven't you?
Yes, I've listened to quite a few podcasts, or his, actually not podcasts, what we call it, YouTubes.
YouTube, yeah. He does an excellent job. His YouTube account is Don Exodus 2, and you're going to hear, if you go to that, you'll find quite a few excellent articles on evolution and just skeptic issues in general. So let's go ahead and give him a call and bring him to the conversation. Hello, we're back, and we're introducing a Whitney, otherwise known as Don Exodus, of YouTube fame, to the show. Whitney, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be here.
Excellent, excellent. As I had mentioned to you before, we're going to discuss a couple topics, primarily David Klinghoffer's article, The Dark Side of Darwinism, which somehow made its way onto the Huffington Post, which, as I mentioned earlier in the show, left me outraged that it could make it there. So I figured I wanted to talk about it.
But see, I don't quite hold the Huffington to that high of standards, but our good fellow Marshall does.
I could understand not holding them to the highest of, you know, journalistic esteem, but I mean, when they make errors that are obvious to even infants and the more sophisticated of farm animals, that's a bit egregious. You know?
Well, someone's got to speak out against it.
Yeah. So, I mean, and well, we're here with frontal lobes and are willing to do so. So.
Absolutely. Whitney, why don't you tell us a couple things about yourself? When did you start your YouTube account, Don Exodus?
Well, I actually, I'm Don Exodus 2 on YouTube. I registered as Don Exodus, and somehow YouTube butchered the password, and I was never able to recover it. This was far before I ever started making videos, so mm-hmm. I just simply made Don Exodus 2 and used that, and later on decided to post videos and figured I would use that name. I started making videos, I think it was December of 2007, perhaps. I think it was one of my first videos.
What inspired you to jump in and start making videos about evolution and contradicting a lot of the creationist BS out there?
It was actually, ironically, kind of laziness. I started off studying evolutionary biology so heavily. It was so obvious that evolution was the correct answer and was valid and accurate. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking, well, there has to be something to creationism. There has to be something somewhere. I might not be getting both sides. I might not be doing something. And I was a Christian at the time. And I decided to just go on the internet and go to places like Answers in Genesis and find out, what is the opposing side saying? And mm-hmm. I was just sort of appalled. And I sort of had this epiphany of, oh my God, these people have no clue what they're talking about. And it's not things that are a matter of opinion. It's not like, something dental related or something that's up in the air. Maybe Barack Obama's a good president. Maybe he's not. This is bottom line. It's 9 o'clock at night. It's getting dark and people are screaming, it's global darkening. Right. I mean, there is absolutely no question. I mean, these people are completely misinformed and they don't know the basics about biology. And it started pissing me off because it seemed that it was one part stupid, one part ignorance.
Yeah, well, and the problem,
one part insane, but go ahead.
Yeah, and the problem with the fact with their being wrong is not that they're wrong so much as it is that there are actually people out there who take them seriously.
Yeah, and if you listen to a lot of the people on YouTube, like the Nephilim Free and the Truthful Christians and things like that, I mean, the idea that Noah's flood sent a jet of water flying off the earth and hitting the moon, and that's what caused the craters on the moon. We'll ignore the fact that there are craters on the opposite side of the moon, too. there are people that take them seriously and that actually believe them. And you know, I think that we sort of have this tendency to sit back and look at that and say, this is so stupid, no one will ever believe it. But I think that we're giving people too much credit, and it pains me a lot to say that. But so I started on Facebook, actually, and in a lot of the discussion groups there dealing with creationists and kind of honing my arguments. And the universal theme is that none of them knew a damn thing about biology, not exactly. A single one. And they would just – it was basically just ignorance, and it was a matter of educating them. And I got tired of copying and pasting and writing the same arguments out over and over and over and over again. And I decided, you know what, why don't I just show you? You know, being, you know, I understand that perhaps these people can't understand what I'm saying. I'll use visual aids. That might help. Mm-hmm. And so then every time somebody would you know, post, you know, the argument for the 137th time, I would simply refer them to my YouTube channel. And, you know, case was closed. I guess I would refer them to specific videos. And it eventually got to the point where it took off a lot. And I just kind of abandoned doing anything on Facebook and, well, other than randomly stalking people, and just focused on my YouTube channel.
And we're glad that you did, because it's an excellent channel. I believe I've watched every single one of your videos. And
oh, thank you very much. Oh, it is the best cure for insomnia.
Yeah. You would believe how many times I've stayed up late at night watching these evolutionists or Thunderfoot and your videos and DPR Jones and all those guys.
A lot of it is about the presentation. I mean, the people like the Discovery Institute and stuff do very good jobs of packaging the information properly so that people suck it up.
Mm-hmm.
What we try to do, I think, is have a good package, a good vehicle to deliver the message and have the message actually have content and be factually accurate, which is something, you know, in an area which we differ from our creationist colleagues.
They're extremely well-produced. That was what I was going to say.
Oh, thank you.
Well-produced.
Yeah, I actually have no video. I mean, if you notice, I mean, I'm a lot further ahead on my video production skills than I am on my image production skills, because all of my images are still drawn in Microsoft Paint. Circa 1984.
That's a lot better than I could do. Well, you know, and even though he doesn't make videos anymore, one person who I actually feel sorry for and is kind of a casualty of the creationist lunacy, I'm sure you remember him, Venom Fang X. Who,
yeah.
As far as I can tell, was just an average, normal kid. Probably a little on the nerdy side.
No, he's Venom Fang X had some. I mean, we've been in contact with family members of his, and he has he actually has some issues.
Yes.
Although I do have to give him, he is. If you contrast him with, if you look at Nephilim Free, just from his syntax and the way he looks and the way he presents and the things that he says, I mean, okay, you're appalled. Instantly, you're repulsed. Truthful Christian, same thing. But when you get to someone like Venom Fang X, I mean, he can form a coherent sentence, and he's a little bit of a different of an, you know, adversary, but at the end it all comes down to they've got different gifts, but there's the same level of dishonesty and malevolence in all of them.
Well, that's what gets me the most, is those like Ray, what's his name, Banana Man.
Comfort.
Yes, and many of these others, I can understand the first few times they say, well, this is what evolution says, and this is why it doesn't work. And then someone comes along and says, no, this is what it means. This is how it works step by step. You're mistaken in what you perceive us to be saying. Then they go, oh, okay, and they turn around and spout the same thing again. Now
exactly.
Liars. And they're being disingenuous completely.
There was one time, or not even necessarily liars, I agree with you, it's willful ignorance, but I mean, if you take someone like Truthful Christian, and this is an honest, I mean, I've had several instances of this happening with him, and if you doubt his mindset, and I use that word loosely, take a look at the Magic Sandwich video, where you can just completely see him just beating the shit out of himself with his own arguments, and he doesn't even understand. He still, to this day, thinks that he owned me in that argument and has no clue whatsoever. I mean, you can explain it to him, you can use pictures, you can help him out with any big words he doesn't understand, but he still doesn't get it. He has told me evolution is false because it adds no new, it's impossible to add new information. I go, well, actually, here's how you can add information. This is how it works. This is how it happens. These are all the times it's been observed, and these are the products of it. Okay, well, evolution is still false because it can't add new information. I mean, it's literally between.
And that, in a nutshell, is basically the creationist methodology.
Yeah, they're not all alike, though. I mean, you have crazy, you have stupid, and you have ignorant. Ignorance, by all means, isn't a crime.
But
we're all ignorant, and we're all ignorant about some things.
You still have arguments being used that are decades old that have been Yeah. Verifiably disproven.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. Demonstrably disproven. You can actually see these things under a microscope or elsewhere. And they are still using those arguments, primarily, in my suspicion, because while a person who's actually taken the time to research evolution and biology and radiology and paleontology and all that stuff, while that person actually knows the truth, their target audience has no idea and just going to...
Yeah, that's what makes them disingenuous.
Yeah.
Well, it's they're not even wolves in sheep's clothing. They're just mean sheep.
Yes. Exactly.
No, it's I don't know.
I can't. I used to debate them all the time. I can't do it anymore.
Well, you do reach a. There is a level. There's definitely like a sort of asymptote at which you reach it, and you're just sort of like, okay, I need to get away from this.
Yes.
And that's sort of going on with Truthful Christian right now. We used to entertain his calls and things like that, but now it's just kind of like, piss off. You know, I mean, he's no longer funny, and it's the sort of thing where whenever debating a creationist, well, with Nephilim Free and things like that, when I offered to debate him, you should never debate a creationist, and I do believe that unless you know enough about them, because a lot of it is about presentation, and it's a lot about your style of argument, and it's about your ability to think on your feet, and I personally know that I'm very good at that, and I know that he's not so much, and having reality on my side isn't really a bad thing. So YouTube needed another, I don't want to say another villain, but it had gone stagnant. After Venom Fang X was, you know, carried away to his padded room, and after Gear Up kind of disappeared, there was really no one in the community, kind of gone stagnant. Here we had a crazy person, and I saw an opportunity. So that's why I offered to, I mean, but at the same time, by and large, whenever you do it, it just gives them credibility. If you don't do it, there is a very distinct way to do it, and you should only do it if you have a lot of experience and you know what you're doing. You have to have a clear goal in mind.
By the way, I think it's after Garup DMCA'd himself to have an excuse to leave the scene. Yeah. That's my.
And Nephilim Free did the same, I believe.
Oh, really?
It's completely.
Did he DMCA'd himself too? Yeah.
So anyway, let's get to Klinghoffer's arguments.
Sure.
The dark side of Darwinism. And in a nutshell, what he does here, well, actually what he's doing here is he's pimping out a movie that he and the Discovery Institute's putting out, What Hath Darwin Wrought. Apparently it's coming out sometime.
Well, that's not self-filling at all.
No. So,
I thought it was this summer or this fall.
Oh, is it?
I'm not sure.
Okay, well, I'm not watching this, so I don't care what it is.
Better hurry before the rapture gets here.
So anyway, what he does essentially in this argument is blame eugenics, all eugenics on Darwinism, on Darwin specifically, not just Darwinism, but specifically on Darwin. And essentially, he tries to make a case that racism is a result of Darwin's works.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Which, of course, as I mentioned earlier in the show, that as we know, racism did not exist prior to Darwin.
This is actually well documented. It's not even in the Bible.
Yeah.
Slavery or anything like that in there.
No, clearly.
Yeah, definitely not the Bible.
And women were treated equally before Darwin, too. There's nothing about them not being able to speak in church. It's, to me, this argument is almost a non-starter. It's so... All right, look. Even if... First of all, the vast majority of Nazi Germany was Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people that elected Hitler. Those are the people that supported Hitler. Hitler himself put God mit uns on the belt buckles, which means God with us. Hitler was obsessed, and Hitler, by the way, himself was a Christian. And
a Catholic.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the argument of, well, Hitler was also a vegetarian, you know? Why not blame the Holocaust on vegetarianism? It's the question of whether or not there is a direct line of correlation between his beliefs and what he did. And the fact of the matter with Hitler is his understanding of evolution was botched. It was more of a, if you look at it, instead of survival of the fittest, it was more of a God's chosen people sort of mentality. And that we are the fittest, we are the best. We are the he didn't understand evolution. Hitler certainly wasn't an atheist. Even if Hitler was an atheist, the vast majority of people committing his crimes were Christian. They were not atheist. But let's go and let's travel into Klinghoffer land, And let's say that Hitler was an atheist, and he did everything that he did because of evolution, which, by the way, once again, if you read Mein Kampf, it's pretty clear that he has more of a biblical sense of
well, he's a lineages.
And, yeah, well, but his view of lineages and the master race and stuff like that is about preserving lineages. It's like biblical genealogy. It's not even about it. He didn't understand evolution at all. No, but even if everything was due to evolution, so what? Viruses, the viral theory kills, you know, millions of people every single year. Some of the worst suffering inflicted on human beings is because of viruses. Hell, take a look at Ebola. But does that mean viruses are false? Even yeah. if, you know, in Klinghoffer's article, he's basically stating that Hitler misused and abused Darwin's theory, which kind of undercuts his own point. Why would he even say that? So you misuse it and abuse it. Well, take a look at the ridiculous things that have been done in the name of Christianity.
Exactly.
I mean, can't you apply the same thing to your argument? Therefore, but wait, are you saying that Christianity is false or that Christianity is evil? Are you saying evolution is false or evil? I mean, there are two different things, and it's either one is a non-starter. Even if Hitler did everything he did because he was an evolutionary biologist and understood it and wanted to purify the human species, it still wouldn't make evolution false.
No, it's a complete fallacy.
Yeah, exactly. And go ahead.
Well, it's kind of like you were saying earlier. It would be like saying cancer is evil, therefore cancer doesn't exist. I mean, it's a ridiculous argument. I mean, it's true. Cancer is evil.
It goes back to a form of the prisoner question, where they studied prisoners, and what actually came out of was they found that like 98% of all convicted felons eat carrots 3, 4, 5 times a week.
Really?
It's not the carrots, it's the fact that they serve prisoners carrots because carrots are cheap. So all the convicted felons in prison eat carrots because they're hungry. Has nothing to do with carrots. But you can make a correlation, but not a causation. And Hitler was more interested in eugenics. Hitler believed eugenics, which did not come from evolution. It did not come from Darwin. It did not come from the theory of Darwin at all.
It predated Darwin by thousands of years. Animal breeding, crop breeding, those were all based on the same principles.
Eugenics itself specifically came from studies from his era and his time frame that you could breed. And it also comes from the old idea that royalty could breed royalty, mm-hmm. and only royalty could breed royalty.
And yeah, exactly. And it's a very biblical view of lineages and of genealogy. I mean, and once again, it's like saying that, well, 90% of cancer people diagnosed with lung cancer have a lighter in their pocket at their time of diagnosis.
Right.
It might be something in the plastic. It might be the flint. You know, I mean, you know, but I mean, yeah, I mean, so even, but I mean, once again, we're still in fantasy land because Hitler was Christian, more Christian than a lot of the Christians that are out there.
And Hitler actually credited his actions to his Christianity and to his belief in God. I mean, there are a number of times where he said his treatment of the Jews was a result of his belief in God.
Yeah.
I don't believe he ever said, I'm doing this because Darwin knows what he's talking about. In fact, I doubt he even mentioned Darwin by name once.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's once again, creationist arguments and reality overlap far less than I'm comfortable with.
Well, so, Hitler has come down as the de facto bad guy of all time. I mean, there was actually more deaths due to the same mentality in Darfur that there was in all of World War II. Darfur lost millions of people. We've had situations like this. But Mao, Stalin, and Hitler, they were people who were not very nice. They were out for one thing, and they didn't care who they had to kill, murder, or whatever, to get what they wanted.
Well,
it has nothing to do with religion or anything else. It has to do with them wanting to be in control, and they had a means to do it.
Yeah, exactly. But go ahead.
Well, they're bad guys. So anything that we don't like that they do, or if I'm, you know, Bible Belt Christian, and I believe in Christianity and everything else is bad, and someone says, well, you know, Hitler was an atheist, well, automatically, that's why it happened. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter who it is. If you are a bigot, the particular race that you don't like, whatever they do that you don't like that they're doing, it's because they're that race. It's just a default mechanism that we use to pick on someone else or something else.
Exactly.
Yeah, and hang on one second. There's a line in his there's a line in Klinghoffer's post that really got me, and it was basically like saying what Hitler did, he bungled Darwinism in order to, you know, what he did was basically like a bungling of Darwinism. So he's not even really saying that Darwinism leads to this. It's saying that a fanatical, you know, interpretation of it will lead to that. Well, a fanatical interpretation of anything will lead to bullshit. Fanaticism in general is a problem. It's not that what's being butchered. It is the mindset that butchers it to begin with. I mean, if you want to see ugly, you can't take a, don't bother looking at a face. Look at a mind. And take a look at, for example, the Crusades. Oh, they say it was a bungling of Christianity. Well, the same argument applies. Therefore, is Christianity false? Therefore, should Christianity be eradicated from the world?
But what you don't understand is those weren't real Christians.
Oh, right, right. Well, find me a real Christian that didn't die on the cross. That's sort of my attitude about it.
Wasn't he?
Huh?
He was actually a Hebrew, wasn't he?
Yeah. Or- I don't know if he was a Jew. He might have been kind of Jewish, but
yeah, Jewish.
Jew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, I think it's one of those things where that argument has been beaten to death, and there are so many sources out there that if people still believe it, you know, I mean, go do the evidence or go do the searching for yourself. Something a creationist will never tell you to do. You know, go look up Hitler's views. Go read Mein Kampf. I know that requires effort and the ability to read, which might not be conducive to creationism, but at the same time, I think that if you're really interested in the answer and really interested in, you know, what exactly Hitler's views were, read his own words.
Well, like you were saying earlier, we shouldn't, unless you're specifically prepared and know what you're doing, you shouldn't publicly debate a creationist, because even the dumbest creationists, you bring them up to the level of evolution, you know.
Well, it's about style. I mean, I could be I could beat a lot of, you know, astronomers or computer scientists about things I have no fucking clue about, just because it's about your style and your debates. Do you have the ability to control the audience? Do you have the ability to play with your opponent? And a lot of scientists and people who've studied stuff like that simply don't have that. And I don't mean this in a self-flating or an egotistical way, but I mean it in a tactical way. You have to have an adequate self-view of yourself.
Yeah.
You can't go in.
Yeah, the debate's not about the facts. The debate is how you present.
Exactly. You cannot go into it thinking, this guy is batshit crazy, the facts are on my side, I know my shit, therefore I'll win. You know, many scientists have become victim of that.
Yeah.
The important part, though, is with articles like this, is like you say, we can look the information up, we can hash it. The three of us know most of these answers, and we know what's wrong with them. But a lot of people that will, A, listen to us and who also listen to Don Exodus don't know the answers. And when you're at work, when you're at the playground with your kids and you're sitting around with the other parents or you're playing...
Watch out for Nephilim Free.
Yeah.
Well, he's crazy.
Especially on the playground. Yeah, and Chuck E. Cheese. And Chuck E. Cheese.
Yes. Well, they bring these things up, and you have to be able to intelligently knock it down quickly. No, you have to say, you know, that's a bunch of horse, and this is why. And then, but you can't present it like, well, they're a bunch of dummies; they don't know what they're talking about. You got to be intelligent and quick. So people like us do need to talk about guys like this idiot. And David Klinghoffer is smart enough to know he's lying.
Yeah,
I agree.
I don't necessarily know. I think that you can be. There's cognitive dissonance. Is he smart? Yes. Is he smart enough to know that he's false? I think that he's got that barrier in their mind. There are scientists who think they can telepathically communicate with their cats. They're perfectly smart people, but they wall off that part of their brain. And I think that when you're dealing with people on the playground and stuff like that, you have to know your audience. Look, I'm being rather harsh and getting in digs on creationists that I sure as hell wouldn't do if I was trying to convince someone who's open-minded. But, you know, I take a look at the platform that we're on. We're on a radio show. We're on a podcast. And if I'm going to be, you know, posting this on my channel and you post it on yours and things like that, the people who are going to be listening to it aren't, you know, listening to 40 minutes of it, aren't the people who are, you know, oh, I'm wishy-washy, I just want evidence. I mean, these are people who want to hear our opinions. And who don't, you have to entertain them, too. You can't just be completely cold with the science facts. And this is something Thunderfoot and I have belabored about over and over.
Right, but you also have to be able to arm the general population.
Yes, exactly. That's what this is about too.
Yeah,
and that's what makes these things important, and that's why we need to take these questions and these points they try to bring up and take them apart, take them down one at a time, so that everyone that listens to us and that's on our side of the fence knows how to publicly
exactly
force about yep. this.
It's one thing to know that it's bullshit. It's another thing to know why it's bullshit. Exactly. And then it's yet another thing to be able to know that it's bullshit, why it's bullshit, and how you can convince other people that it's bullshit. And that's what this conversation is about. It's about giving exactly. you the arguments and the facts.
Well, in fairness to most scientists who, as we mentioned earlier, don't always do a good job of explaining evolution, is most of them are not orators. And unlike most scientists, like most physicists, you know, a physicist doesn't have to go around defending gravity everywhere he goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Most biologists don't have to go around defending... Go ahead.
No. And the point you were making, like I was saying, I mean, most scientists don't have to advocate on political and religious grounds the results of the research.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, especially when it's political, you've got people who don't know anything, you know, controlling or attempting to control reality. And the bottom line is that, look, you're entitled to your own beliefs, you're entitled to your own opinions, but you are not entitled to your own facts. Exactly. And that's it, plain and simple. You can tell me that you think this, you think that. I can tell you I think this and that, but what matters is the evidence. It doesn't matter. The evidence is far more important. I would much rather have somebody be wrong for the right reasons than someone who's right just by accident. I'll address the former person any day.
Let's get into a couple, just end this up. Let's answer a couple of common arguments against evolution.
Well, you can just go down the list if you want. There's no...
Okay. And,
Well, you got the short text you emailed us. That'd be a perfect jumping point right there, because these are some of the dumber ones. Like number yeah. 5 drives me insane.
Well, let's just go through them one by one. Hang on, let me pull up the email real quick. Okay. Mutations only remove information rather than adding them, which is why Huntington's, which is a gene duplication, you know, doesn't exist. I mean, right? I mean, it's very easy. There's something called gene duplication. It's not some crazy idea. It's something that's observed every day in labs. There are thousands upon thousands of documented examples of it. In fact, the vast majority of our genome is a result of gene duplication. But it also kind of depends on how you define information. You can define it one of two ways. One, you can say there can be no new traits, right? Let's say there are only green beetles. Well, now there could be a mutation which inhibits the pigmenting or changes the pigment so that it's now green.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now instead of at a population level, well, now instead of beetles being only brown, now they can be green too. So now you have green and brown. That's an increase in information, and that's been observed multiple times. You can also look at it in the genomic level, in the sense of, are you adding new DNA? Are you adding new genes? Well, that's been observed too. Take a look at nylonase, which basically it's what's called it's gene duplication followed by a frame shift mutation. And you can take a look at that on YouTube. I've got a couple of videos on it, or check out the Wikipedia article on it. It's something every biology student learns, is what a frame shift mutation is. What happens basically is that you've got genes and you get an extra copy of them just via a replication error. It happens all the time. It's happened in your body 100 times today. But what can happen sometimes is that there can be a frame shift error, which causes all the proteins after that, until you get to what's called a stop codon, to change and become a completely different protein. 99.999% of the time, nothing happens. It yields a non-functional product, and the organism isn't affected, or it's affected negatively. Mm-hmm. But that one out of 100,000 times, and keep in mind this is happening 100 times a day in every organism on the planet, that one time you get something new. And that's what happened with nylonase. Or, you know, nylon wasn't synthesized by humans until, 70 years ago. So bacteria really had no reason to be able to break it down, right? After all, if you're spending, you know, it's broken down by an enzyme. And if these bacteria are producing this enzyme before, when there's no nylon, well, they're going to be at a disadvantage because they're wasting money you know, producing stuff that doesn't exist yet. I mean, it's like, you know, making solar panels on the dark side of the moon. I mean, there's no point in it. It's just a waste in resources.
You've ignored the possibility that a god could have created this bacteria that could only eat things that have only existed for 70 years.
Well, you're lucky.
Oh, you mean so God sparked the mutation into them then?
Right.
Well,
no, they've just been very hungry for the past, I guess, what, 6,000-7,000 years.
Oh, but then what about their competitors that are competing for the same resources? Those guys aren't wasting the energy on this, and those would be easily able to outcompete them over the long term. But anyways, what they did was it was a gene duplication event followed by a frameshift mutation. We have the original gene. We can see where and when the gene duplication event occurred, and we can see where and when the frameshift mutation occurred, and we can see the following gene product, which is nylonase, and that's these bacteria now being able to consume nylon for energy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is. It's like a no case in point. I mean, it's not up for discussion, really. I mean, this is something that's been beaten dead so many times. I mean, we're beating, you know, a horse fossil right now. It's not even a mummy.
Well, exactly. But like we said earlier, the average, their target audience doesn't know shit about genetics and the addition of information or anything along those lines. So to your average person listening to a creationist, this is a great argument.
So take a look at once again why I told you why I got into the why I make videos on YouTube to begin with. It's for situations exactly like this, and I don't mean to be self-promoting, but I made a video, how evolution adds new information. If you want to know how to defeat that argument, take a look. It's complete with visual aids. It will help you understand the concept, and once you understand it, you can go on or take a look at my How Evolution Works. I think it's part 3 or part 4 on mutations, and that should help you out also. But, I mean, I made my videos for situations like this, and I realize that it's, you know, I don't mean to be self-promoting, but at the same time, it is my answer in depth with pictures, well explained for 10 minutes that, you know, really just about anybody could understand. So.
And problem is most of the ones I argue with won't even go to a channel and take a look at it because one, a lot of them don't even want to see that they could be wrong. They like the nice handy answer. Usually what I get is not mutations remove information. Usually the argument I end up getting presented with is mutations only cause death and disfigurement.
Well, that's question number two. That's point number
two. Which is like, take a look at the CCR5 mutation in human beings, which grants us immunity to AIDS and HIV.
Or
I guess that's bad.
Huh? Lactose intolerance. It was a mutation that created something good. And it benefited so well that I think it's, what is it, like 70% of the population now can synthesize or whatever you want to call the process lactose at an older age than we could, what, 3,000-4,000 years ago?
Yeah, lactase is the gene that is responsible for converting the... It's actually kind of, if I may go off onto a dorky ramble, why does milk and lactose intolerance people... Can I go off on a dorky rant for a minute?
Please.
Well, what happens is in people who can't synthesize lactase is the enzyme responsible for converting lactose into simple sugars, which we can digest. For people who don't have that, what happens is that the lactose, which is a sugar in milk, stays in your guts, and it basically acts like a salt. It sucks up water, which is why you get diarrhea, because instead of having it sucks up water from everything around there, the water goes into your intestines and into your bowel, you know, basically clinging to this lactose, which hasn't been broken down, and that's why you get diarrhea. So,
oh,
fun story. So, anyways, there are numerous documentations of positive mutations, and it's the sort of thing where 3 minutes on Google would make that argument laughable. So, and a CCR5 mutation is a good one because it grants human beings immunity to AIDS.
Wow, so they actually have that nailed down to what's actually happening with that? I have not read that.
Oh, yeah.
Last thing I read about that, you know, of course, I don't keep that up that up on too much stuff. Most of the stuff goes over my head. But there are some isolated individuals that did have, that were actually immune to AIDS, and I didn't realize it actually narrowed it down that far. That's impressive.
And the reason, Yersinia pestis, the organism which causes bubonic plague, it hits the same CCR5 pointer receptor on our cells in order to gain entry.
And they found that, you know, throughout the world, the people with the CCR5 mutation that grants them immunity to AIDS is about 3%. Yet Northern Europeans, where the plague was prevalent, it's about 12%. So.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. Impressive.
Yeah, I mean, what's the third one? Mutations are too rare to have any real impact on a species. I mean, mutations are pretty common. I mean, if you understand the fundamentals of evolution, which is, you know, you've got three things. You've got heritability, which means that there's a trait that can be passed down from one organism to another, right? So the differences are pass-onable. And then you've got the second thing is that you've got changes which are occurring. In other words, there's mutation. Not all organisms can reproduce equally, you know, which is where natural selection comes into play. So you've got these, you've got a wide variety, right? A wide, I guess, kind of genetic variability. And then some of those organisms can reproduce can reproduce better than others, which is just, it sets it up if you look at it in the long term. Gene frequency will change over time, which is what evolution is. I mean, this has been, mutations are too rare to have any real impact. Well, I mean, what the hell? What about, predator recognition and things like that, whereby, you know, a bird that eats moths will, you know, they'll get this prey image in their mind, their image of what their prey is supposed to look like. And you can see it cycles. You know, the birds will recognize brown moths, you know, as their prey, and, you know, it'll start off with 85% of the moths being brown, and then after 10 years, it'll be down to 15, and then there will be black moths. Well, then the black moths are now up to 85%, and the birds switch their predator search image, is actually the term, predator search image, and then they'll go after the black moths, and then it'll, you know, rebound, and then all of a sudden there'll be a white moth. Hmm. And this is well documented. It's you just have to kind of, I guess, know the information in order to rebut it. But, I mean, mutations are too rare to have any real impact on a species. I mean, that's... Hell, take a look at human beings in the... I mean, what do they mean by impact, I guess, in terms of breeding? Look at cystic fibrosis. Something interesting about cystic fibrosis, it's a defective chloride channel in the lungs, which basically causes water to be pumped out and you to get real thick, nasty mucus that you can't clear. Mm-hmm. Well, individuals which have, you know, have both, you know, from mom and dad are cystic fibrosis positive are really bad off. I mean, they will die. It happens. However, organisms which are, or human beings which are what's called a heterozygote, and that they've got one for cystic fibrosis or one gene that codes for it and the other one that doesn't, they produce half of the water in their mucus that they should. So it's not quite as viscous, but it's still more viscous than it should be. And that's actually advantageous, in that it helps protect them from food poisoning and things like that. When you take a look at, there's something called, I'm sorry, I know I'm kind of shotgunning information here, but you look at Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium predicts the frequency of the, all the organisms with the capital R, which would be like the positive dominant trait, both copies, big R, little R, which would be the heterozygote that is, you know, in this case for cystic fibrosis, the mom has it, dad doesn't, they get one in between, or little r, normal people, neither one mom nor dad, we've got normal genes. And you can predict the frequency, and what we find with cystic fibrosis and malaria, by the way, because or with sickle cell, by the way, because sickle cell helps protect against malaria, you find that the people with the mix of it is much higher than expected. And the reason being because there is some benefit to being in between. So you've got something artificially keeping cystic fibrosis and sickle cell anemia in the population, and that's how it is. So to say that there is no real impact, I mean, here's an example of mutations, you know, artificially altering the gene frequency within the human population.
All right. Number four is an argument that we've all heard a million times. Most organs and biological features are far too complex to be the result of random mutations.
Irreducible complexity. Yeah. I mean, this is something, again, that's been debunked. All right, let's use their example. The best of the best of the best that they can come up with.
Yeah.
Flagella, right?
The flagella?
Yeah. What they don't take into account is how evolution works. Is evolution takes something that exists, modifies it for a new function. Like, take a look at a watch. A watch is useless unless all the parts come together. Therefore, it couldn't have evolved. Well, really? I mean, if you look at a clock has a pendulum. Clock has gears. Clock has dials. I mean, all of these could be used for other things. And in the flagellum, what we should look at, I guess, if you want to see, what if we look at the flagellum, if intelligent design and irreducible complexity are correct, what we should expect to see is when we break the flagellum down to its components, none of them should have an ulterior function, right? They should all be, you know, de novo, brand new, never seen before, because what we expect of evolution is correct. We would expect them to be rigged together. We should expect them to be adapted from previous different functions.
But they all exist solely for the function of maneuvering.
Of what they do. Yeah. They have no second function, because after all, if they have a second function, then evolution explains how they came together. Mm-hmm. Right?
Exactly.
That's what evolution says. So therefore, if intelligent design is correct, their poster child, the flagellum, should none of the parts should have any ulterior function or alternative function, rather. And when we look at it, we find that, you know, when you remove 40 of the proteins, you're left with a type 3 secretory system, which is basically a really nasty molecular syringe that lots of bacteria use to inject their toxins into our cells. So, yes, a type 3 secretory system is part of the flagellum. But that really speaks to a loving God, doesn't it? I mean, the flagellum, he loved us so much. I mean, flagellum is what's called a virulence factor, in that it makes bacteria motile, in that they can move around and make us much sicker than bacteria who don't have them.
Hey, that's all the fault of the fall. That's all Adam and Eve's fault.
It's like to suffer.
Vibrio cholera. I mean, you know, causing cholera. They've got a flagellum, and that's what makes them so nasty, because they can really dig in there. If they didn't have them, it was true. But it's okay. No, God gave them that because they're special. I mean, there's no, you can't defend it. The girlfriend is really getting after me. Do you mind if I give her a call for 2 minutes?
Oh, sure, sure.
Is that all right?
I will give her a call right back.
I just have to call her before bed. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'll be right back.
We're married.
Yeah. Oh, both of you, congratulations.
Yeah, we're married. Yeah, we don't ever
understand.
How long have you guys been together?
Well, I don't know, we've been off and on for
just a tip. No, all right. Yeah, I'll give you a buzz back. All right. Sorry, give me 5-10 minutes. 5 minutes if she's in a good mood, 10 minutes if she gets angry at me.
There you go.
Okay.
She couldn't. She obviously wasn't that mad.
No, she was going to bed. I just didn't want to. I'd been putting her off for a little bit because we were doing this, and I was there's a free dental clinic thingy, and I was Truthful Christian is calling me, but there's a free dental clinic. So I got home from school at 5:30. Had to be at this free clinic at 6, and didn't get home till 9:15, so I haven't had a chance to talk to her. So,
you actually gave Truthful Christian your phone number?
Oh no, not my phone number. He's calling on Skype.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, God, he always fucking calls me at the worst. No, the worst part about it is, like, if I'm playing a video game or doing something, or I just want to relax for a minute, like, he'll call, I won't answer. Mm-hmm. He'll call. Like, he just fucking sits there. Calling repeatedly, like he doesn't. Like, I'll get back and I'll be like, "You have 547 messages from Truthful Christian and Thick Shades." It's like they don't. They just keep doing it. It's really fucking annoying. I'm really surprised that he hasn't called back yet, actually.
Wow.
And he is one guy who is just. He's, and that's one reason why we're kind of backing off from him, because it's really clear that there's something not right with this guy.
That happens a lot. I mean, there's a lot of guys who just troll various websites like Frangulon and other places where they clearly there's something really wrong with these people, and they're just fanatical about it.
Yeah, I mean, but no, I mean, he has no self awareness, and I've told him that. But yeah, what are you gonna do?
I've watched some of his videos.
Can't fix stupid.
Yeah, that's the thing about Truthful Christian, is he really is stupid. I've seen his videos. They're laughable.
I haven't even seen this guy. Of course, I usually don't listen to him because they drive me nuts.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I can't get through him and Nephilim Free, all of them. Can't get past more than a minute of them because they just repeat themselves and they're so fucking boring. I can't listen to them.
Nephilim, I don't think, is quite as stupid as Truthful Christian, though.
I agree. Nephilim is 50 insane, 50 stupid. Truthful is 90 stupid, 10 insane. People like Shock of God are, you know, or Venom Fang X is 95% insane, 5% stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right, do we want to knock out some more of these questions?
Well, here, let me take on number 5. That's our next one. Mm-hmm. This has 3 blatant errors that I can see right off the bat. One, I thought it was 5 to 10 million years. All right, sorry, let me read it. Number 5, the Cambrian explosion.
It was like 15. Go ahead.
Yeah, the Cambrian explosion itself disproves the notion that life evolved slowly in the span of 20 million years. We witnessed the development of most complex life forms where prior all life as simple single-celled life. Well, like you say, I thought it was 5 to 10, 15. It was still less than 20, I thought. Second one.
20 million times, by the way, just real quick, if I may interject.
Sure.
Young Earth creationists think the Earth is 6,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 20 million years.
Exactly.
And they say that's nothing. They say that's the blink of an eye. Well, they're off by a factor of about, you know, 5,000. That's not, you know, that's not a simple oopsie. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a forgot to carry the one. But anyways, go ahead. So, I mean, that's like in the span of 20 minutes, we witnessed the most complex. Anyways, go ahead.
Right. Well, it's like development of most complex life forms. Now, I thought it set the stage and developed most life form types, not most complex life forms. There's no fuzzy bunnies. There's no mammals in the Cambrian time period, as far as I understand it. And then the last one, where all prior life was not simple single-celled life. There was multicellular life forms before the Cambrian explosion, and I thought it was the advent of a lot of oxygen finally getting into the air that allowed for the change.
There are a number of things. First of all, it's false for a number of reasons. First, being that multicellular, when he said, and I quote, where prior all life as simple single-celled life was before. And in reality, from 590 Cambrian explosion was 540 million years ago.
Right.
But from 590 million years ago, there's diverse fossil forms, you know, with multicellular life, 590. So that's 50 million years before that. So that's not up for debate. That's factually incorrect. And there are even transitional fossils within the Cambrian explosion fossils.
Yes.
Lobopods, for example, which are worms with legs, and they're an intermediate between arthropods and worms. Those have been found within the Cambrian explosion in and of itself, but there are no transitional fossils, so I forget.
But at the same time, I mean, it is true that it's largely acknowledged that during that period of time, the diversity of life really did expand.
And there are a couple of reasons for that, one being the evolution of HOX genes, which HOX, which stand for homeobox or homeotic genes, control the body segment, and it's basically it's sort of like a computer-ish, very binary way of dividing the body into segments and developing each from there. Those were evolving around that time.
Right.
Search up HOX genes, will blow your mind. And also, we were coming out of an ice age.
Yes.
But what's interesting is, tell me, what do the creationists, what's their explanation for this? What do they believe? What do they think happened during the Cambrian explosion, in your opinion?
It really, from the arguments I've had to deal with, that what they're being taught, either from the pulpit or from other non-scientists speaking out, is that the Cambrian explosion happened much quicker than 20 million, 10 million, or 5 million years. It happened very, very fast, and that all of the basic life forms, what they consider all of the kinds, bird, fish, mammal, lizard, all of these things were created during that time period.
Yeah, that's my
understanding. And that's utterly false. First of all,
yes,
there were no mammals created during the Cambrian, no reptiles, no birds, no insects, no spiders, and even more, flowering plants. No plants at all appeared in the Cambrian. No plants in the Cambrian.
Right.
I mean, none of these things appeared during that. I mean, in fact, the only thing were fish which didn't have jaws. that wouldn't look anything like a fish to you or I.
Hmm,
I mean, right. So their position that this is when life was created, and all of a sudden we've got it's factually, it's painting a completely different picture from reality. And in fact, there were animals before the Cambrian. There were Cnidarians, which are like jellyfishes and corals and things like that. There were sponges, Porifera, plenty of other phyla. There were at least six phyla are Precambrian.
The Precambrian area is when it started to begin, and then something changed. I remember, like you said, it came out of an ice age. Remember, oxygen became abundant, and mm-hmm. so they were able to make changes at a faster rate because of something the oxygen does.
Well, it allows you to increase body size.
Okay. Right there. Good. Which is enough in and of itself.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's you know, in the Ordovician period before the Cambrian, I mean, that was one of the most extensive diversifications of life. Well, and people don't look at that because they're not the, I want a puppy. You know, I mean, that shit didn't occur then, but.
Yeah, they see the headline is all they see. They see Cambrian explosion. They see Big Bang when actually it should be fast expansion, not bang. Mm-hmm. And Cambrian explosion should be Cambrian fast diversity. But because we as human beings like to type things, we like to give, analogy explanations for things. We like to sum things up into a headline. So we do that. Well, then the uneducated only read the headline. Darwin was wrong. Thanks, New Scientist. And now we got these people banging out the drum again, going, he was wrong, even the New Scientist says so.
Yeah.
Read the
article. It's been, you know, the bottom line is that, look, for creationists out there that would be listening to this, take a look at where you're getting your information from. This statement contains flat out blatant stuff that's not correct. You're being misled. There weren't animals, or there weren't rather mammals, no reptiles, birds, insects, spiders, anything like that afterwards. There was life beforehand. There was multicellular life beforehand, and it's not the only explosion to take place. I mean, they're basically bastardizing science, and this is something that's not up for debate. This isn't up for discussion.
It's factual.
Look at the facts. You've been misled, and what does that tell you about the source you're getting your information from? This isn't a matter of opinion. I mean, if you want to argue evolution or something like that, but look at this point. I mean, it's. But then again, take a look at number two. Mutations are always negative. That should immediately, for anybody with even a high school education, that should really turn them off. But mm-hmm. at any rate, so I mean, I think that sort of sums up the whole Cambrian explosion part.
My pet peeves, that statement right there, and I hear it over and over and over again.
Well, I this list has actually inspired me to make two videos, one on the Cambrian explosion, the second one being on the evolution of feathers, which is number...
Fascinating. Did you read that one article? Who was it? It was a video article out not too long ago that went through it. It was very fascinating.
Well, they've done a lot of research on that in California and the past decade.
But that's where the gays are. You can't trust it.
Exactly. All right, let's move on to number six. I don't know.
No single mutation could possibly give any species any discernible advantage, which is why the CCR5 mutation granting human beings immunity to AIDS does not exist.
That just goes back to number three.
Yeah.
Well, and this was in the article, this was in a situation where Klinghoffer decided to insert his own statistics, where he said, let's imagine that there was a mutation that did give a discernible advantage and gave that species a 0.01% greater chance of survival than it would have otherwise had. I think we can all agree that if that was the limit to what a single mutation could provide in terms of benefit, that it probably wouldn't be of any value.
I disagree, actually. After a million years, 0.01%. After you know, 1 million generations, that 0.01% would look pretty big. Hell, look at the Black Plague and the 12% compared with 3%.
Oh, yeah. Well, just look at your compounded daily interest rate of 0.1%.
But is that even an accurate... I mean... My suspicion is he pulled that percentage out of that.
He probably did. That's where he got most of his arguments. The smell is pretty clear. But, I mean, still, it's I don't know. I mean, yeah, whatever. But, I mean, at any rate, I think that's kind of been debunked by the CCR5. I mean, and that's just one of many.
Yeah.
Punctuate number seven. Punctuated equilibrium has been demonstrated to be impossible.
By who?
Where? Citation needed. I haven't seen it. Much Credit Equilibrium, by the way, it's people view evolution as one of two things. It's either punctuated equilibrium, which is the idea that you've got long periods of stasis, meaning no change, and then all of a sudden an environment, is something in the environment changes. Because after all, it's the environment that does the selecting. The environment is what determines the frequency of genes. Mm-hmm. Because after all, those who don't have the genes to survive will decrease.
But there's also breeding selection, as in with the giraffes.
Giraffes, peacocks, sexual selection, all things like that. People either view it as long periods of no change with, big climactic, and we get big things like the Cambrian explosion, or they view it as steady, graduated, like stair step sort of mentality. And in reality, it's a period of both. Things are changing gradually over time, but when the environment comes into play and radically changes, you get things like the Cambrian explosion. So it's a matter of both. So punctuated equilibrium has been demonstrated to be impossible.
That's just flat out wrong.
Show me a single study.
Yeah, if I remember correctly from the argument, he went on to say that even Gould admitted that it was wrong and he was full of crap.
No, and Gould, before he died, even flat out, called them out on that, basically saying, this is exactly why you can't trust these people. Look at how dishonest they're being. This isn't what I meant. This isn't what I said. Their dishonesty knows no limits.
Yeah, they take that out of context and try and use it as, and they don't even understand what he was talking about.
Exactly, and it's really, really, really unfortunate, but I guess it is what it is. But, at any rate, punctuated equilibrium, self-promotion, I have a video on it. Check it out.
Alrighty, just really quickly, because this one doesn't require a whole lot of discussion. DNA and RNA could never randomly come into existence. Life could never have formed without a designer. This really doesn't even deserve our attention because it has nothing to do with evolution whatsoever.
Yeah, it doesn't. It has to do with abiogenesis. If you're really curious about abiogenesis, RNA can, by the way, RNA can spontaneously come into existence. Not only that, there's something called montmorillonite clay, which catalyzes a formation of RNA. RNA is the same thing as DNA, only with an extra oxygen molecule. That is all that it is. It's sugar, it's a nitrogenous, after all, ribose. It's a sugar, it's a nitrogenous base, and a phosphate backbone. It can spontaneously assemble in the form of montmorillonite clay, which is one of the most common things on Earth, in primordial Earth. But even without its presence, it can. And the amazing thing about RNA is that it has its own enzymatic activity, rather, in the sense of RNA can form RNA. In other words, it's sort of like mad cow disease with prions, in the sense of prions are basically like rogue proteins in the brain that whenever they touch another protein, they turn that one into a prion, which touches another one, and basically turns your brain into Swiss cheese. So RNA can, in and of itself, create more RNA, and it can form spontaneously. It's been documented numerous times. Check out any of the videos on abiogenesis on YouTube.
And again,
R and Ross.
Completely unrelated to evolution. But they love you. You can't find a creationist argument that doesn't bring this up.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
It's an argument from ignorance.
Yep.
You're saying, I don't know how it could have happened, therefore it couldn't have happened. But it's even worse than that. What they're saying is, I'm too lazy to look up how it couldn't have happened, therefore it couldn't have.
Or even worse than that, my arguments regarding evolution are so bad that I'm actually just going to pull in another argument from a completely different theory that has nothing to do with evolution into it, just to confuse
you. Or you point them to the source and they say, oh, well, that's just scientists using big words to try and confuse us. That's their language of deception.
Yeah, yeah. The intelligentsia should be removed. First thing we do is kill all the lawyers.
The second law of thermodynamics means that all life is impossible.
Oh, God, not the... I hate that.
Know, I mean, it's basically that's entropy. Disorder can increase. The second law of thermodynamics basically states that things always move towards... the total order of entropy in the universe increases.
Right, well, you can't have tornadoes, you can't have hurricanes...
Crystals.
And you can't have the big eye on Jupiter without increase in complexity.
Mm-hmm. Or more importantly, I can't clean my room because it violates the second law of thermodynamics because I'm creating order from disorder.
Even you can't
create order from disorder. The bottom line is that the second law of thermodynamics is very real and it is very accurate, but it doesn't pertain because what happens is I spend, you know, 5 joules of energy cleaning my room. I know it's a ridiculous number. And as far as the environment's concerned, my room going from disorderly to orderly gains 3 joules. So there's still a net loss of 2. We still have the increase. It really applies to closed systems, but in reality on Earth, we get excess we get the makeup energy from the sun.
Well, we also have a hot radioactive core that adds to the geological churning of the Earth as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And
it's like, what is it? I can't remember which moon it is. One of the ones that they think has got a liquid core due to gravity. And the tidal gravity going around, as it goes around, it constantly pulls and flexes the moon. And you create huge ice sheets that are cracked. Increase in complexity, very little sunlight, and gravity is the factor that's increasing it.
Yeah, go ahead. The bottom line is that there are a couple arguments that anyone even discussing evolution should realize that when you hear them, this person has no clue what the hell they're talking about. This is one of them. No mutations are only bad is another one. Those are giant red flags that the person has, you know, the education and biology of my, almost two-thirds empty wine bottle. Anyways.
Well, and then, of course, you know, you've got quantum mechanics.
But I mean, I think right now we're you know talking about theoretical physics with someone who you know is still crapping their pants. So,
and 10 is basically about entropy as well. Just saying the sun by itself is not enough; does not provide enough energy for life to have.
Yeah, I've never heard of this guy. I don't even know if he's real. He's got. If you go into a more detail in his actual article here. Many evolutionists say the second law of thermodynamics doesn't apply to open systems, but it's simply not true. Blah, blah. Dr. John Ross of Harvard University states, and then there's 3 dots, so we don't know what's missing. There are no known violations of the second law of thermodynamics. Ordinarily, the second law is stated for isolated systems. And then it goes on and on. He skips some more, and it's important to make sure that I've never heard of this guy. I haven't tried to look him up.
I don't agree that the second... I mean, I completely agree the second law has never been proven false or anything like that.
He's implying here that there is somehow... So the field of...
Go ahead.
He's saying it here. It's like open system exchange energy with the surroundings. For an open system, the law is stated the total entropy of the system and surroundings will never decrease. Okay.
Yeah, that's what they were...
Okay. There's nothing wrong with that, but I don't see how that applies to what he's saying.
Yeah, I mean, if it meant if it had the ramifications that this dishonest author intended it to have, it would be on the front page of, you know, Science or Nature or anything, any of the prominent publications. I mean, you would have heard about it.
It would at least would have showed up on you know, on several blogs.
I mean, hell, they took, you know, the idea that horizontal gene transfer was more prevalent in the past than previously thought is blasted on the cover of half the newspapers on the country and New Scientist with the title Darwin Was Wrong. Tell me that if there was actually something, you know, that was a problem for evolution, that it wouldn't be on the front page of everything. Sorry, don't buy it.
No.
Foot mining, plain and simple.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. And we're preaching to the choir. We're banging the drum at this point. And this guy, he's talking, like, goes back to what we started to begin with. He's telling people that don't want to believe the information that they want so that they can spout it whenever they feel like it. And it's like I love to bring books on evolution and cosmology and stuff like that to work and watch heads explode. Oh, you don't really believe in that? No, I trust in the science. It has nothing to do with belief, sport. And I get that a lot.
Or what number 11? Big Bang is false.
You're right. It's a big expansion.
Really? Well, wait a minute. Hang on. I am supposed to be listening to someone who doesn't know the difference between biology and theoretical physics. Biology and physics, very different. You don't know the difference of them, and you expect me to take your scientific opinion. I mean, that's
I mean, that's one of those things where it's not even... I mean, that speaks for itself. It doesn't even relate to evolution.
Well, it's similar to the DNA, RNA point. Again, like you said, has nothing to do with evolution. But they bring it up in virtually every argument that I read.
Yeah.
You know?
Or it, number 12 is actually an interesting one. The fossil record doesn't show an increasing complexity. But what he's doing here is he's comparing one study of two direct descendants. By the way, which are evolutionarily related, evolution was the basis of the study. If it wasn't correct, the study would have no value. Mm-hmm. And he's comparing things like such as you know the spirals in the shells, which you know correlate to corrugated cardboard, meaning strengthening it. And he's counting the backbone and things like that. And it's between two related species, and he's not finding an overall trend in his small sample size. First of all, evolution doesn't state that things must get increasingly complex. It's that trend over time whereby things adapt to their environment, and generally, yes, they do increase in complexity, but we still have relatively simple things alive today. There's nothing wrong with that. What evolution...
Plankton.
Evolution doesn't say that things will automatically get more complex, they will get better. What evolution says, however, and does make clear, is that we will never see something more complicated than its predecessor, in the sense of we will not see, you know, a poodle before trilobites. We won't see it, and we don't see that. Why the hell do we not see that? No creationist can answer that. I mean, why don't we find poodles from the Permian? Why don't we find birds before reptiles? Why don't we find mammals before reptiles? Why don't we find mammals before fish? If everything was created at the same time, why we would expect to find them all together. But we never find a single one. Just one. I'm sorry. It doesn't... I mean, they completely ignore the thing. They're not necessarily taking him out of context. It wasn't a poorly done study, actually. It's rather interesting. But what it demonstrates is that there's no strong selective pressure towards complexity. It's about adaptation in the environment. And it's heck, even if I were to disagree with myself, it's still possible that the selective pressure was too small to be noticed in the small sample size that they used. But then again, the study is contingent on evolution. If you actually read the study, it's assuming that these two are related via evolution. They're different species. So it's like a creationist, like all the recent, it's like a creationist who doesn't believe and denies in carbon dating, using carbon dating to disprove evolution.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they do that all the time.
Earth bones don't carbon date. Well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah. Exactly. Where are the transitional fossils? I mean, look, there was
one.
I recall hearing a thing from Ken Miller. Is basically an anecdote of how these paleontologists were at a meeting and they almost got into fist fights over whether to call a new group of things reptile-like mammals or mammal-like reptiles. It's
the transitional fossils are so numerous they can barely be counted.
The National Academy of Science released a very profound statement on it. Google National Academy of Science transitional fossils. I have a playlist of three videos full of transitional fossils. It tells you what they are, where they were found, when they were found, and how we know that they're transitional fossils. In other words, what do we expect to look for? What has to be there in order for us to consider the transitional fossils? It's complete with, you know, photos and all that stuff. I mean, this is, again, one of those things where I got tired of hearing it, so I made videos about it.
But the reason that this argument is used so often is, again, because Joe Sixpack doesn't know shit about transitional fossils.
Exactly.
And he hears a creationist says that, and he's like, by God, that's right. Where are those damn fossils? And
yeah. Or they close their eyes and go, I don't see any fossils.
Yes. Or now there's two gaps.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and go from chimp to human, find the intermediate, and well, what happened from, you know, from chimp to human, call it a creationist in the middle, and then you say, well, what's between chimp and creationist, and what's between creationist and human? You know what I mean? There's no.
Well, I've been seeing a trend, and I've been debating this. I've been debating evolution since the 90s when people started showing me books, The Death of Evolution and all these other things. And I've been debating this with people, and evolution's my pet science. I that 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 really took me from doubting to disbelief, because it,
I agree. Yeah.
But the big killer for me is I have watched, and I've even in the last 10 years of where I work, the people I work with, I have watched these trends where we are actually gaining ground. And what we're seeing with these people that are coming out louder and louder and louder is they're losing. And they're losing the battle and they're losing the people. And so they're getting louder and louder and louder, trying to hold on to the power they have. Because it's not about evolution. It's not about science. It's about who's in charge. Who's going to make the rules that we have to live by? And they're losing, because I've seen the guys from work go from there's no such thing as global warming to it's natural global warming, or we might be doing something. I've seen the same deniers go from no, the world is exactly 6,000 years old. Well, it could be 6 to 10,000 year old to, well, it could be a few million years old. Yeah. Well, we know the world's old, but God stepped in. And then we're now to the point where evolution is true, but it was just God directed. So we're chiseling away at this with winds like Dover, and
to me, it has to be in the media. It has to be in popular culture. I mean, there are a few things that could change a person's mind. There's reason and evidence, but if people accepted that, they would accept evolution to begin with. But
we have jet cars. Really,
you can go with violence, or you can go with ridicule. And I think that it shows like Family Guy. There's a lovely image of average, retarded, creationist Peter, you know what I mean, down at the bottom. It's a scale of things. And stuff like that is what gets people to laugh at them. Yeah. And when you laugh at them, that gets them. That's what we have to do, in my opinion. But
no, I agree.
We're actually winning the argument. And I see it more and more. And the few that are left that are fine, like the Discovery Institute, they've gone from a very strong stance to a weak stance to a weak stance to a weaker stance down to their whisper. And then they got guys like this that are, and sorry, Marshall, but they're getting published on the Huffington Post and a mostly opinion-based political magazine or online magazine, and they're not hitting it anywhere else. They're falling by the wayside on most schools. I think we've won the battle. Well, there's still going to be a few arguments left, but we've won the battle with evolution and schools. It's finally pretty much over, and we're starting to get converts. We're starting to get the followers who are out there that only follow along with what's popular, like you said, with what's popular. And they're starting to go, well, you know, all this other stuff is just silly. And it's slowly, slowly we're winning. But the death throes is what we're witnessing. These guys are out here desperately trying to hold on to what little power they have, and it's falling by the wayside.
Yeah. I mean, it's unfortunate, but you just, I think, again, popular culture is really the way to move on at this point. I think the information's out there, especially now in the age of the internet. You can find, you know, education and mockery. I like a good combination of both, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Whitney, I'm going to let you handle bird evolution in your upcoming videos that you're going to do.
Oh, you don't want me to talk about it here?
Or do you want to do it now? I didn't.
Well, we can real quick. Actually, I was reading an interesting article today that I thought I'd share with you. And it's basically for all human beings, most animals, whether they're birds, reptiles, mammals, we start off with webbed fingers. But what happens is via a process called apoptosis, is the cells, it's programmed cell death. And that is the cells in the webbing disappear and they die, and it's a certain program that triggers that. And when these proteins are blocked, you know, everything has webbed feet. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So proteins cause, everything starts out with webbed feet. Proteins cause the webbing to resorb, but if the protein is blocked, everything has webbed feet. Interestingly enough, blocking this protein also turns scutes into feathers, and scutes are basically like scales, only they're on bird legs. There are histological differences between scutes and scales, but they're basically the same thing. Think of them as the big scales on birds' legs. And if you block this protein, it turns scutes into feathers. Now, scutes, smaller scutes called scutella and scales around the eye, all have the same chemical composition as feathers, and they're all controlled by the same genes. And researchers have basically blocked the protein, and we've seen experimentally that these scutes have turned into feathers in reptiles, complete with barbs that are interlocking and they're characteristic of feathers. After all, look at Down. Down does not have the interlocking barbs that the flight feathers do, which is why Down is fluffy and all over the place, whereas the flight feathers, you know, don't even let the wind slip from them. You have to kind of tackle the idea of how and why did birds evolve? Why did feathers evolve?
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple ideas, one being that they evolved for flight. Personally, I don't believe that, because I think that in order to be efficient enough for flight and to get the brain programming for the pattern, but the pattern meaning like a central pattern generator, in other words, to get the rhythm and the angulation and all the musculature to cooperate, it would require too much at once. Another possibility, insulation, down comforter. I mean, feathers are better than hair, plain and simple, and they're just as easy to evolve. And then over time, it could have been adapted. So the possibility, and then there's another one, and that's that scutes and scales evolved from feathers. For example, like Tyrannosaurus lost its feathers, just like hippos and elephants have lost their hair. Or perhaps feathers are primitive to the whole group, and birds didn't descend from dinosaurs, but rather their brother and sister. And that explains how feathers could be primitive. In other words, right now the idea would be that birds descended from dinosaurs. But what if birds and dinosaurs are brother and sister? And their ancestor had feathers, dinosaurs lost them, birds kept them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are all sorts of finds all over the place. But as far as stating that what the page ends with, scale cells could never have evolved into feather cells. They very, well, not scales, but scutes. Very easily could have. They've got the same, they're both the same type of keratin. They're both controlled by the same genes in the same location. And scales can, in fact, turn into feathers in animals that don't have feathers if you simply block the proteins. So,
definitely.
Once again, this jackass who didn't know what he's talking about is lying.
Exactly. My point. He's lying.
Yeah, that's sort of how I feel. So, but at any rate, if you scroll back up to, what, number two, that should have been obvious. So,
yeah. And again, that's one of those very common arguments they always use. But anyway, hey, Paul, do you want to put this list on your website and your blog?
Sure.
Just so our listeners can have something to reference to if they want to. Just reminders of what we were talking about. And Whitney, thank you for being on the show. You were great.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much for your time.
And I would just remind our listeners to take the time to go view your videos on Don Exodus 2.
Mm-hmm.
Don Exodus, just Don Exodus isn't going to get them anywhere. It's got to be Don Exodus.
Well, I mean, if they Google Don Exodus, or if they YouTube search Don Exodus, I mean, they'll be linked to or directed to Don Exodus 2. But youtube.com/user/Don Exodus 2 or whatever, just type in Don Exodus 2 on YouTube and you'll find me.
It comes up. It comes up right down below. If you just type in Dog Exodus, it comes up second or third one down. It says Don Exodus channel. And it says Don Exodus 2 below it.
Real quick, where did the name Don Exodus come from?
Ironically, when I was growing up, I loved the Beatles. But I also loved Tupac, ironically. And he had the whole Don thing, and I really liked that. And the Exodus part... Well, that's something that's for another discussion. But it actually, my derivation of it doesn't really have anything to do with the Bible. Although there is one verse in Exodus that I absolutely love, and that's, and who made thee a king and a judge of them? And I think that's very good. And that's why I decided to get it tattooed on my arm, because of that verse. But, yeah.
All right.
So it was sort of a combination of the two.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for being on the show.
No problem. And, yeah, thank you for having me.
Everyone,
hey, it was nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. Thank you very much for your time.
All right, take it easy. And everyone, thanks for listening.